Entrepreneur on Fire, episode 95.
Welcome to EntrepreneurOnFire.com, where remarkable entrepreneurs share their inspiring story. Let their journey illuminate your path to success. And now, your host, John Dumas.
Fire Nation, do you have a product or service that you would like to share with the 100,000 plus unique downloads Entrepreneur on Fire generates every month, consisting of passionate entrepreneurs? Chris Brogan sponsored an episode for his book, The Impact Equation, with great results. If you would like to have 15 seconds at the top of Entrepreneur on Fire to share your product or message, go to sponsoreofire.com to find out more. Okay, let's get started. I am simply thrilled to introduce my guest today, Tim Ferriss. Tim, are you prepared to ignite?
Always.
Yes. All right, Tim. Tim has been listed as one of Fast Company's most innovative business people of 2007, Forbes magazine's Names You Need to Know in 2011, and is the seventh most powerful personality on Newsweek's Digital 100 Power Index for 2012. He's an angel investor, advisor, and author of the number one New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Business Week bestseller, The 4-Hour Workweek, which has been sold in over 35 languages. His latest release, The 4-Hour Chef, is an instant classic. I've given Fire Nation a little overview, Tim, but take a minute. Tell us about you personally. We want to get to know you. And then take another minute. Tell us about what you're up to right now.
Sure thing. Well, I suppose I have made an accidental career of taking my quirks and peculiar hardwiring, i.e. being a human guinea pig, and turned it in to something that's actually sustainable. So I never planned on it. And the connecting the dots in hindsight is maybe easy, but certainly going from graduating with a degree in East Asian Studies to working for a startup in mass data storage, then sports nutrition, then traveling around the world effectively unemployed, and then ending up an author was not entirely planned. But I think that's part of the benefit of being an entrepreneur, is that you can seize opportunity when you see it. The question of what I'm up to now would be focused primarily on The 4-Hour Chef. I'm really excited about this latest book, and it's certainly the most beautiful thing that I've ever had the opportunity to put together, with 1,000+ full-color photographs and hundreds of illustrations and whatnot. So that's pretty much focused on that, and then I'll be taking a little mini-retirement after this.
And you'll definitely have deserved it, Tim. I'm holding on to the book right now, and it is just a mammoth masterpiece of beauty. I mean, color, images throughout, and just is crafted in such a way. It's something you just want to keep hanging on to. And I never thought I'd go back to a hardcover book after I fell in love with my Kindle Fire, but this is something that I will be curling up to on my couch pretty often and truly enjoying it like you just can't from any other way.
Yeah, this you know, you bring up a good point. There are so many of my readers, because my readers are really early adopters and technologists, or avid tech users anyway, but there are so many tweets and Facebook messages saying, I never thought I'd say this, but you really have to get The 4-Hour Chef in print. And the reason is, a lot of people don't know this about me, I wanted to be a comic book penciler for about 10 years. I was actually an illustrator for 2 years in college. It's part of how I paid my expenses.
Wow.
And this book was an opportunity for me to design, work on, along with a lot of very good designers, designing a book spread by spread, which is something you just don't get in digital. So the two-page spread by two-page spread by two-page spread, and having that storytelling and experience is something that at this point is pretty hard to replicate in digital, along with just the tactile experience of using a particular stock or a particular embossing and things like that. But it was a very fun project for me, and really got me excited about some of the more, or I should say less, tangible passions that I've had in the past, like art. So I'll be spending a lot of 2013 rediscovering those.
Wonderful. Well, I'm totally stoked to delve more into this later in the interview. But before we do, we want to start off this show like we do every Entrepreneur on Fire interview. And that's with a success quote, or your mantra, Tim. So what do you have to share with us, Fire Nation, today?
The quote that comes to mind, I was thinking about this, is actually a Bill Cosby quote. And Bill Cosby is an amazing guy for a whole host of reasons. If you haven't seen the documentary The Comedian about Jerry Seinfeld, I would encourage everyone to see it. It tracks Jerry Seinfeld and then a new up-and-coming comedian as they both develop new material. And it's such an amazing contrast of professional and unrefined amateur. It's incredible. But Seinfeld holds Bill Cosby on this pedestal as the consummate professional. And Bill Cosby's quote was, and this is not in the documentary, but I read it in another location. It was, "There's no one sure path to success, but there is one sure path to failure, and that's trying to please everybody." And that has stuck with me, and it's a quote and a philosophy that I revisit very regularly, because I do think, particularly in a digital age where you can become a prisoner of your own instant accessibility, whether it's through Twitter, through Facebook, through email, through phone calls, voicemail, text messages, etc., you can end up becoming purely reactive just because you want people to like you. And I'm not immune to that. I want people to like me as well. But it can have a hugely harmful effect on your life, where you end up running your life on an agenda that is purely created by other people. And I think that when that happens, you can't really manifest the greatest value that you have to offer the world. And that's a huge, I think, sort of spit in the face of humanity. So the Bill Cosby quote is something I come back to very regularly, and it's something I came back to as part of my New Year's resolutions for 2013.
I can just see how that can be such a great mantra for you in your life, Tim. So again, this is about your journey personally as an entrepreneur. So take us down to the ground level. How have you recently, or at some point in your past, actually applied that quote, that mantra, to your everyday life?
There have been a lot of ways that I've implemented that, and it's closely related to another this core tenet of my personal operating system, which is to make the big good things happen, you have to get comfortable letting the small bad things happen, right? So if you have this one to-do list item that's been lingering for days or weeks or months that you know you have to take care of, maybe you should not run off to ship the Netflix back, pay the penalty, you know, pay the extra $5. Maybe you should let yourself get that parking ticket or whatever it might be that you need to stop using as a means of procrastination. There are always small bad things that can and will happen. And I feel like the most effective people I know are very good at letting the small things go and recognizing they're either very small and inconsequential or at the very worst reversible, right? And I'm not recommending people send in their taxes late or anything like that, but maybe sending in your AAA payment, you know, 2 weeks later and paying a $5 premium is worth getting that one major to-do that will change everything to the next milestone. And I've applied that not only how I view my to-do list. So I'll scan my to-do list each day or each week and ask myself which single item is the force multiplier that would change everything else. Usually it's what would make you most uncomfortable as a conversation or email or otherwise. But secondly, I've applied that to my companies in the past. So for instance, when I have been managing contract manufacturers and fulfillment centers and so on and so forth, I have increased the independent decision-making thresholds. What I mean by that is, I recall at one point in 2004, I was doing probably 60 hours a week of customer service-related email work. Because I would get an inquiry from, say, the call center manager, or not call center, fulfillment center manager in the middle of the U.S. This was in Lebanon, Tennessee, for a bunch of shipping reasons. And they would say, "Well, we have an Olympian who wants product overnighted to such and such a country. How should we bill this? Are we allowed to do this?" And I was handling all of these in a very one-off fashion, even though we had certain rules for what they could and couldn't do. And I sent an email to everyone at one point, all of the managers I dealt with at these different contracted companies, these third parties, and I said, I am no longer your customer. My customers are your customer. If something can be fixed for $100 or less, please just fix it and log it in an Excel spreadsheet, and I'll review these decisions at the end of each week. And I did that, and it started off $100 or less on a weekly basis. And then over time, as I realized, nothing happened. Nothing really bad happened. And my customer service time dropped down to less than 2 hours a week, 60 to 2, very dramatic. I mean, this is within a 1 or 2 week period. I ended up increasing it to, you know, $250 every, $250 and checking every 2 weeks, then $500 threshold checking every month. And did little things happen? Yeah, things went wrong. Did they make some bad decisions? Yes, they did. Were they all very minor or reversible? And did they allow me to then get the distribution from 2 or 3 countries to 12 countries or increase the product profitability, you know, 10, 20% in the same period of time? Yes, it did. So it had a huge life-changing impact for me personally, also financially in the business. And I think they all are related to that Bill Cosby quote.
No, and that's just great insight. And to jump back to your first point that you made, as entrepreneurs, we all have things that we know that we have to do on a daily basis, things that we do need to prioritize. And for me, my day really changed for the positive when I listened to one of my mentors, Brian Tracy, who said, swallow the frog first. And when I really started adapting that mentality and just doing the thing that I knew I had to get done, but I normally would have procrastinated on, and getting that done first, it just set the tone for the day. So I love those 2 points that you made, and that was just another thing that's really been very powerful for me as an entrepreneur. And I would just like to use that to transition, Tim, into our next topic, which is failure. Because as entrepreneurs, we face failure every single day, and the ones that thrive are the ones that embrace failure. And you're our spotlighted entrepreneur today. So I want to talk about a time when you failed in your past, or when you just came up against an obstacle that was extremely challenging to overcome. And then share with us how you did overcome that obstacle, that challenge, or that failure.
Yeah, well, I could talk about a very recent example.
That'd be great.
Yeah, let's talk about the 4-Hour Chef, right? I mean, the 4-Hour Chef was a huge experiment, and it continues to be an experiment. You know, like you noted, I mean, I'm on the front page of Amazon oftentimes for a lot of people when they jump onto the homepage. But as the first major book out of Amazon Publishing, there was quite a brouhaha about this book and my move from Random House. And with all of the muscle, or I should say, despite all of the muscle that Amazon has brought to the table, there have been some really serious handicaps related to the book launch and as it relates to the New York Times bestseller list and whatnot. So the my target, as it has always been, is number one, New York Times, among other lists. And because the book was boycotted by all of Barnes & Noble, as well as almost all of the major retailers, Books A Million, et cetera, nationwide, I ended up at number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list. Now, I suppose that's appropriate with the way I use 4 all the time. And it ended up on the Wall Street Journal bestseller list, the USA Today bestseller list, and so forth and so on. But on the New York Times list, there's a combined print and digital bestseller list, on the Wall Street Journal list there is. And there's also an ebook bestseller list on the New York Times. But the New York Times does not count advice, how-to, miscellaneous books in that particular category, that particular bestseller list. And I sold more than half of the books I sold that first week were digital on Kindle, and not a single one counted for the New York Times. So I ended up number 4 New York Times, and to me that was a huge, crushing blow in a way. And I'm not gonna lie, it was really painful to work so hard on something for a year and a half. I mean, I really do think this is my best book in a lot of ways, and I had a lot of my self-worth and the ego and everything else invested in this baby that I'd spent so much time just protecting from all the elements and fighting for. And I mean, my God, if you could look underneath the hood on that book and what went into it, like, it was a war of attrition on so many fronts to get that thing done the way I wanted it to be done, to make it optimal for my readers and just a beautiful experience. And then at the judgment day to have it fall at number four and not number one was really painful for me. And which sort of highlighted for me how capricious and subjective the New York Times can be. And that's not sour grapes, just pointing out that like you have to choose your metrics very carefully. And this is the lesson I took out of it. It's like, all right, well, I know, Amazon knows, a lot of people realize that none of my digital counted for the New York Times. And whether or not the New York Times places it at number one, the book has really pushed forward the conversation about what is possible and what the future holds. And I mean, you can see right now, Barnes & Noble boycotted me, great. I said this in interviews, I said, you know, what's their 20-year plan? And now in the news every week is there the next financial trouble that they're having. And I think that by taking a few arrows as the person at the forefront, which you do always if you're trying to pioneer something, I've brought the conversation forward. And the metrics that I'm paying attention to now more so than the New York Times are, number one, how are the three books doing together? Because I view them as a trilogy. And is everything trending in the right direction, right? So books come out, there are a lot of one-week wonders, but I am in it for the long haul. And the book is pretty much where it was on Amazon, a week after release or 3 weeks before release. And so it's sticking very well, which to me is most important because it indicates that people are buying, are continuing to buy it because of word of mouth, not just marketing. But that's a very recent example of an extremely painful experience for me. And I think it's important for people to realize, whether you're just getting started or whether you've had your first few major wins or you're at the top of your game. And I don't think I'm yet at the top of my game, hopefully, but, you don't ever get rid of the problems. You just trade up in problems, right? It's like taking, you used to have the Toyota Corolla of problems, and now you trade it in, you have like Mercedes S-Class of problems. I'm not particularly religious, but I think that the universe sort of chooses battles and foes for you that are commensurate with your capabilities. So I think it's good to be prepared for that and to view that as part of the journey.
Well, Tim, you're being very gracious, and let me just give you my perspective as an outsider here, and it's that you are really exposing the underbelly of the system and showing the system to be broken as it is. And so on behalf of entrepreneurs, I just want to thank you for taking that leap into this void and really just making this system exposed. And there's going to have to be fixes to this in the future, because obviously digital books, things along these lines, this is the wave of the future. And these archaic systems need to shape up or ship out. And so I just really am glad that you were the one that took that leap. It was a brave maneuver, and you're really just leading the way and holding the torch for the rest of us entrepreneurs who are going to be following you into this void that is soon obviously going to be extremely populated place. So thank you.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say, and I appreciate it. And I do think there are going to be people who are going to, with new technologies, whether it's using Atavist or otherwise, whether it's iTunes, via iBooks or Amazon itself, people are going to do this in a much smoother, much more coordinated fashion. And I think that by accelerating a lot of these changes, by partnering with BitTorrent, by highlighting some of the problems with the New York Times list, the changes that are going to take place in the next few years are going to very heavily favor content creators, which is great. I mean, it's really exciting for me to see a shift in the power dynamic from people who have a stronghold on physical distribution to the people who are creating good content and who have a direct relationship with their readers, listeners, customers, whatever it might be.
Couldn't agree with you more, Tim. I just returned from New Media Expo by Blogworld in Las Vegas, where I was fortunate enough to speak on that subject specifically, the content creation within podcasting, having a daily podcast myself. And it's just incredible to see, even these last 6 months when I attended the New Media Expo / Blog World in Manhattan back in June, as opposed to now, just the amount of people that have since come to this convention as opposed to the other one. And then the podcasting track specifically, just the numbers of people that are packing into each speech and each talk was just really powerful to see, and the buzz in general. about content was just really exciting. So let's use that to transition to our next topic, which is that aha moment. And you've shared with us already in this interview a number of aha moments that you've had. And I just would like to step back again to some time in your journey.